and welcome to the SB Live Washington podcast, your weekly conversation about the top stories across the high school sports landscape in the Evergreen State. I'm Andy Bueller, preps reporter with SB Live. Dan Dickow is with me. He's SB Live's preeminent basketball mind, the host of the ISO podcast. And Todd Millis is with me. He's the prodigal son of Tacoma. He's your pal and mine, whether he likes it or not. Gentlemen, thank you for returning. It's nice to have the three of us back. How are we doing?
I can't complain too much. We got a lot of snow in Spokane, and looks like there's a lot more on its way. So I'm dealing with that while you guys deal with the rain on the west side.
Yeah, it's good. Happy holidays to you guys, and also happy holidays to our loyal listeners. You know, we're 10 days out, and still no sports, but still talking about it. At least we're providing some content. We got an interesting topic today.
Well, I mean, I feel like we're kind of rowing upstream, you know, 9.5 months into this this high school sports shutdown, this pandemic. Last week, I really loved that interview that Dan and I did with Rick Skeen, the head coach at Kings. He was great. He talked about great Corey Kispert stories. I know he's for college basketball heads out there. Corey's one of the preeminent players across the country right now who's hoping to get another chance as Gonzaga restarts. So, and then we talked about just the state of high school sports and what it's going to look like when things come back and kind of Kings makeup. So that published last Friday. I think we'll probably publish this week's a little bit earlier than that. So if you haven't listened to that, please do. It's in the feed. But today we're going to talk about a couple of quasi-related issues. Right now, we are looking at early February start date for the return of the high school sports season, and that is the plan set by the WIAA. Although, based on the trends with the virus, it's widely believed that current COVID rates won't come near meeting those requirements to allow high-risk sports like football and basketball, wrestling. Maybe low-risk sports will get to play in certain parts of the state, but it's looking like an uphill battle right now. And as we've said in past weeks, the main path for getting high school sports to be played on its current schedule has got to be some sort of change in the rubric and the guidelines at the state level, the governor's office, the DOH. So much of that remains to be seen, but throughout this shutdown, some of the different groups that advocate for students across the state, student athletes, have taken and been put in a pretty interesting position. The WIAA, some of these coaches associations, football, basketball, these are not necessarily groups that you would look at and associations you would look at and say, oh, this is a political organization. You know, 9 months of no high school sports has, I think, forced their hand a little bit. And you know, so I want to walk through a little bit of, we've talked about it in recent weeks, but some of the things that that these different groups have done to kind of approach how to advocate and if they're going to advocate for the return of high school sports. So the State Football Coaches Association, there was a story that went up on the site last week, scorebooklive.com/Washington, your home for high school sports news and information. A social media campaign with this West Coast Coaches Alliance. It's the State Football Coaches Association in Washington, Oregon, and California put something together where players across the state, you were seeing them post videos that were directed at the Governor Jay Inslee, post videos that kind of say how they're doing, how the shutdown has impacted them, and advocating for a safe return. That's phase two of a big social media campaign that's been led by this coaches association. And I have a little bit more. I talked to Monty Kohler, who's the winningest coach in state history. He's at O'Day, obviously, and he's a District 2 rep with the State Football's Coaches Association. And we'll get into more of that a little bit later. But WIBCA, High School Basketball Coaches Association on the boys' side, has taken a little bit more of a cautious approach. They're not necessarily doing any advocacy work out loud. They're kind of saying that, hey, most coaches are in agreement with this timing, but it's a little bit of a tight rope walk to advocate for the return of play when the virus is at its worst right now in the state. That's kind of how they feel. And the WI has taken a strong stance. As we've talked about, Mick Hoffman has been really lauded by a lot of people across this state for his forward-thinking stance and his really strong message in an op-ed released a couple of weeks ago that just says, begs the Department of Health and the governor to please give the WIA, give school districts a chance for athletics to take place. So my question to you guys is, you know, these groups were not necessarily put together and operate as you know, advocacy groups and as groups that could even be construed as sending out a political message. But are these groups responding correctly right now during this pandemic? Should they be doing it any differently?
Well, you know, the unfortunate thing is you see the numbers and the virus spike in the wintertime, like a lot of people were concerned about and worried about. I personally think a lot of it is due, and I'm not disregarding the impact of the virus or the power of the virus, but I think a lot of it is due to the more testing that is available quickly. So more people are being tested. That being said, I think that you knew it was going to come to a point where coaches, associations, and coaches wanted to band together and say, hey, you know what? We've been letting things kind of run its course. Our student athletes have kind of shared their voice in wanting to do things. It's time for us to figure out what our coaches' alliances are going to do, whether it's, you know, state associations of coaches, like you mentioned on the West Coast, banding together and trying to have a common message. Because I think that honestly, I think a common message is one of the thing that would be important to either speed up a decision or to enhance or solidify a decision. Because if there's not a level playing field as far as thought goes with parents, athletes, coaches, administrators, I don't think you'd have any way to go to, you know, a decision-making body like the state government with Governor Inslee and allowing anything to get going.
Yeah, kudos to the Football Coaches Association, not only in Washington, but in the West Coast. Their social media campaign, you know, very similar messaging. Some of the other things that we've seen previously this fall, addressing the mental health side of it. Obviously, we talked a lot about Mick and his strong message, and the blow, you know, sort of the pushback that I think was overdue. And you're right, Andy, he's been lauded a lot from coaches and athletes and parents, oddly enough, for that message. I'm a little surprised that at WIPCA's passive stance. They've always sort of taken, they've always sort of been conservative in their approach. They're kind of a wait and see group. I really have a lot of respect for Nalen in that group. I know that they have talked to their coaches behind the scenes and said, hey, listen, we're looking for feedback. We're looking for ways to, you know, go about, you know, messaging this. And, you know, I get it. In one sense, basketball, you have to probably be the most cautious about, because right now as a high risk sport, along with wrestling, it's probably in a COVID sense, you know, probably the most dangerous of all the sports. But they're first up. In the Washington model, they're the first sport up. I would expect that their messaging be a little more aggressive and a little more in line with what the other associations have done. I was a little surprised that that they've been a little more in wait and see mode than the other groups. So that was a little disappointing. But again, you know, they're probably in a little more dire situation too from COVID impact.
You know, I appreciate you bringing that up, Todd. I talked to Nalen Sood, who's the head coach at Mount Lake Terrace. He's the president of the Coaches Association. And their line is like, hey, we're taking a more cautious approach, and we have this wide network of coaches associations across the country that we're surveying and collecting data from and watching what really kind of seeding all of trust into this sport medicine advisory committee that is, you know, really helping inform the decisions at the top and following their lead. But he said, you know, one thing that I will add is that it's not like these guys are sitting on their hands. You know, he told me last week, Sud did, that the reason that they want to have kids back in a sports setting isn't so that banners and trophies can be won, but so that kids can get the opportunity to be their best. In the new year, though, I think if the pressure starts to mount and the picture becomes more gloomy that nothing's changing, that February 1 start time won't happen, that's when I think we'll see WIBCA start to become more vocal as an association. The question is it going to be too late? So, Dan, do you see... as far as the messaging from any of these groups, and especially the basketball coaches, a lot of whom, you know, all three of us talked to, but you've known, does this surprise you? And do you see that messaging starting to ramp up in the next couple of weeks, especially as we, you know, pass through the holidays into a new year?
You know, I it does surprise me in they're not pushing as hard as maybe I thought they would to solidify a February 1 date start date. I think they're still hopeful for a February 1 start date, as is everybody. But with so much of the uncertainty with the spikes in COVID over the last, you know, 2-3 weeks, it's put a lot of different things kind of up in the air, regardless of sport, regardless of academics and going back to school or athletics. And so, you know, it's a really a touchy subject. A lot of it goes to, kind of what your personal preference is for taking on quote unquote risk, and as well as kind of what you anticipate that you fall in line with politically, because there's a big difference between the two when you look at opening things up to do things versus keeping them shut down. And, you know, each person is entitled to their own rights, and it's hard to really kind of push too hard. I think it's personally too hard to push for an exact answer from so many people. That's why I don't think you've seen a lot of across the board ability to agree on absolutely we are 100% we're starting this date, or we want this, or we're going to throw an absolute fit. I think because there's so much uncertainty. You know, my hope is that, you know, with the fact that you get this vaccine that is going to put a lot of people's mind at ease, you're going to see people kind of loosen up and say, you know what, let's go ahead, let's move forward as closely as we can with life as it was back in February.
It's well said, Dan, and it falls, you know, right in line with, you know, something that Monty Kohler, O'Day's football coach, who, as I mentioned at the top, is involved with the State Football Coaches Association, what he said. And I'm going to read a quote that we published in a story about the Coaches Association's social media campaign. He just said, "With our kids, we just need to keep the light at the end of the tunnel, keep that hope alive, and protect each other, protect our bubble, so that we're not a part of the problem." That's the biggest thing for them. He said that we're doing the right thing, we're following the guidelines. It would be pretty devastating to do all that if everything got shut down until the fall of 2021. It would be sad. Right now, they're all under a modified season, but it's that hope, keeping that hope alive that they will have an opportunity to play. It's not about football or basketball. It's about the mental health of those kids. You know, that's pretty much, I think, comes from the same place that Nalen Sud spoke from, but obviously a little bit different of an approach with the Football Coaches Association saying, hey, kids and coaches, we need your voices to be heard. We don't want it to be vitriolic. We don't want it to be, you know, political mudslinging, but you have a genuine gripe. You're being genuinely disproportionately impacted. And, you know, essentially, look, you're collateral damage. So we want to hear your voice. We want, you know, the powers that be to hear your experience and have to answer for it. So, you know, certainly a very interesting position that all of these state coaches associations are being put in, and some, you know, are taking different approaches to it. I want to take a moment to tell you about our friends at Washington Federal. Washington Federal is a local bank and portfolio lender with more than 200 branches across 8 states, more than 32,000 fee-free ATMs, drive-up ATMs, 24/7 online and mobile banking. And Washington Federal is a proud sponsor of SB Live Sports and SB Live Washington. The folks at Washington Federal care deeply about high school sports and the communities that support them across the state of Washington and beyond. Head to wafdbank.com to learn how Washington Federal can help you meet your financial goals. That's wafdbank.com. Washington Federal, a neighbor you can count on. Let's move on quickly to our second topic that really ties into the first. Something that I have heard in talking to coaches over the last few weeks, talking to folks at the WIAA, folks that are involved in season planning and decision making, is the idea that within the sport of basketball specifically, that there is talk that there is, I'm going to rephrase this. Coaches are wondering if there might be an ability to lobby to the Department of Health that the prospect of wearing masks in a basketball setting and whether or not that can downgrade the risk of basketball from a high-risk sport down to moderate or even lower than that. That would allow for an easier threshold for basketball to return on time. I think it would you know, maybe motivate schools and such to follow guidelines if you see it that close in the clear view. But what do you guys think about that? Masks in basketball, if wearing masks during competition could theoretically downgrade the risk factor, would that be a road worth going down?
No. I read an article today. I can't remember where I saw it, but I think North Carolina is a state that's wearing masks. There are so many things right now that are being done for optics, and I think this is one of them. I'm okay with wearing masks. I'm out in public all the time. I wear a mask. I do try to stay socially distanced. But if you are competing athletically and you're breathing as hard as you are, in a sport like basketball, a mask is not going to do anything. I've seen, workout videos that people have posted from AAU tournaments and teams. The players, three of them have a mask on and two of them are wearing them as a chin strap. I mean, a mask playing in a game like that is not going to do anything. And that's, I know there's going to be people that disagree with me, and that's fine. But I think that right there is simply for optics. But I guess if you really want sports to go as badly as I do, and that's the caveat that, hey, you got to wear a mask, let's go for it. But really, a mask is not going to do anything in the sport of basketball like that.
Todd, what do you think about the science of it? I mean, Dan, I appreciate that point you brought up of, hey, you see these settings, these basketball settings where folks are wearing masks. Obviously, in college sports and pro sports right now, there's a lot of testing and a lot of resources to allow players to be able to play in a setting where there's no masks. But when there are, how effective are they in a basketball setting? Are they coming down, every 2 seconds? Are people wearing them seriously? Does the science, to your knowledge and the conversations you've had, line up with the fact that, masks would theoretically lower that risk?
What do I look like, a dang scientist? Come on.
Yes, you do.
I mean, Dan's right. I mean, this is as much about optics as it is science. But then again, I think sometimes some of these standards are about as much about optics as this science. Listen, we've covered Idaho football. I have a much different perspective talking to coaches all fall in a sport that went through this. And I know I've mentioned this in the podcast a few weeks ago. I look at COVID as sort of a bucking bull. You make the decision. Do you want to get on the bucking bull or not? I think kids and coaches in Washington want to get on the bucking bull, just like kids and coaches in Idaho wanted to get on the bucking bull. They just had administrators who who gave him the green light. And I tell you that none of those coaches, it wasn't easy, it wasn't smooth, but none of those coaches, and I mean none of them, would do it any differently. So I think kids and coaches would do anything to get back on a basketball court if that means wearing masks for the optics of it. And listen, I don't know what these athletic apparel companies, I don't know if they've made great strides in the fabric and then sort of the scientific usage of them, and just they're better masks than they were 3 or 4 months ago. So there might be that part of it in play. I don't know. I don't know what Under Armour and Nike and Adidas have done. They look pretty smooth for masks, but scientifically, I don't know if they work any better or than they did 3 or 4 months ago. But I've talked to coaches and kids that want to play and would do it. Now, listen, I mean, soccer coaches have been pining for the same idea. It's a much different arena. They're outside. The ventilation's better. They're not running at the same pace as basketball players. You know, I'm curious. I was curious to know what Dan thought about this as a guy that ran his butt off for 48 minutes in the NBA. If this could work in a competitive setting.
I don't think it could work. I mean, I think it's an optic thing. You know, the one of the most interesting things to me is in colleges will go through these COVID protocol tests. So every player and coach that's on the floor is COVID negative, right? Yet they still they'll huddle, right? They'll have a coach's huddle. They'll be, you know, 18 inches apart while coaches are giving directions. They'll play. But then when play begins again, all the benches and the staff members are sitting 8 to 10, 12 feet apart and diagonally spaced. That to me is, again, one of these other optics that's just, you're creating a lot of fear from people that are being swayed one way or the other. And unfortunately, I think that's something that's impacting youth sports because it doesn't get the time and the recognition that it deserves from a higher body, a governing body like Governor Inslee.
Certainly a discussion that will continue if this is something that's put in front of basketball coaches, in front of the WIA, by the State Department, the State Health Department. We'll see if that's something that's put in front of them reasonably and said, hey, if this is what it's going to take for you to get lowered. And like both of you said, and a coach I talked to, last week and ran this by, who has a top 10 team, all classification, who I posed the same question to, and he said, man, without hesitation, yes, if it helps us play, we'll do it. So I appreciate the discussion, both of you. Before we get out of here, we're recording this the day before signing day. It should come out. Signing day may have already passed when you're listening to this, but scorebooklive.com/Washington is your home for signing day. High school sports across the state of Washington, Todd and I are going to be are active at work churning out stuff on the early football signing day and all the weird stories that come in a year when football didn't happen in the fall. So, Todd, outside of that, is there anything that you would like to direct listeners to?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Friday, Mecca Agbuka, the consensus number 2 recruit in the state, a top 10 recruit in the country, committed to Ohio State. I'm going to go back out to Steilacoom. You know, he's part of a group of seniors at Steilacoom that are signing football. It's been a great group. They were in the state championship game last year, wanted that chance to get back and possibly play Tumwater or whoever again. So I'm going to be back out there on Wednesday and talking to him a little bit. Again, you know, when an in-state guy leaves out of state, there's some blowback, and I'm sure he's experienced that a little bit, but it's hard to fault a young man going to Ohio State right now the way that they're putting receivers not only on a national stage, but putting them in the National Football League as well. So, a lot of good stuff from signing day, both from leading up and obviously from Wednesday as well.
Dan, you've got your recruiting rankings as we're recording this right now. The latest to come out is number 12, counting down from 25 in the state of Washington. That's Kobe Young. Outside of that, outside of the ISO podcasts, which you can find wherever you get podcasts three times a week, anything else that you want to direct listeners to?
Yeah, this recruiting evaluation list is, I think I mentioned it in a podcast a couple weeks ago. It's been a fun challenge. I mean, I've watched a lot of film that's been sent to me by different coaches, whether high school or AAU, and talked to a lot of different people. And, you know, a couple people have sent some messages, hey, you missed on this player or that. You know what? That's a difficult one because you have to talk to people throughout the state and get perceptions of evaluations on where kids are going to be at the college level and what their impact might be there. And that's kind of really where we were heading with this. There's going to be lots of other players that make up our lists over the next couple months as we begin to cover high school sports. But all in all, you know, it's been fun, and I'm really looking forward to, you know, the last 10, 11 guys being released.
As am I. Scorebooklive.com/Washington, as I've said, is going to be your home for those recruiting rankings, your home for Todd and my signing day coverage, your home for this podcast and everything else across the high school sports landscape in Washington. Thank you both for joining me for another week of the SB Live Washington podcast. For SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, they are Dan Dickow and Todd Millis. I'm Andy Bueller. We'll catch you next week. This podcast is brought to you by SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, your national hub for high school sports news and information. Subscribe for free wherever you get podcasts. You can find our work at scorebooklive.com/Washington. As always, a big thanks to our sponsor, Washington Federal, and thanks to Dan Dickow and Todd Millis for bringing the heat every week. The song you're hearing is by the band Woodrow. It's called So Far Away, written by Carl Johnson, James Schroeder, and my dad, Matt Bueller. I'm Andy Bueller. Talk to you next week.